Welcome, Oscar fans! The 2020 Academy Awards were full of surprises, but nothing was more surprising or exciting as watching tonight's movie take home the award for Best Picture. Because we watched Charles Band's 1982 film Parasite tonight on B-Movie!
That's not the right movie.
It's not the right movie. Yeah, not that one.
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania. And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Holmes, and crazy Chris Hudson.
Wait, did you actually pick the Parasite movie that won Best Picture? Because we all watched something else, I think. I watched something else.
Didn't we already do this bit for the teaser?
Wait. I'm so confused. Should we have watched the Academy Award-winning film Parasite?
Yes, by Charles Band from 1982.
Hudson, you're mixing a bunch of shit up in your head. The movie Parasite did win the Oscars this year, Best Picture, amongst other awards. There's a Charles Band, but Charles Band did not direct that one.
Well, you know, I don't ever actually watch the Oscars, so...
Well, this is going to be a weird episode.
Welcome, everyone. I'm your confused host, Chris Hudson. And with me, as always, is Jason Holes.
You know, Chris, I'm glad that Mike brought up the fact that Paul and I actually met Charles Band.
We did? Oh, that's right, we did.
Paul, we have that photo, don't we? We can post that.
Yeah, we should post that on bmoviemania.com.
Anyway, also with me is Mike Hayes.
Hold on, let me wash the flavor of this fucking movie out of my mouth with some Molar.
Oh, God. Oh.
That's better.
And finally, I have to admit, I'm very surprised he's back from jetpack land permanently, Paul Brooks.
Sorry, buddy.
I was going to do the thing that Mike did. Now I don't know what to do.
Goddamn sickies.
Damn sickies.
So apparently this isn't the Oscar award winning movie, which makes me wonder, don't movie producers have people who research titles? Like, wouldn't we all save ourselves a lot of trouble if someone in South Korea had known Charles Band had already created a movie called Parasite?
Do you think that, like, the production team of the Academy Award winning end was like,
no.
Oh, dude, Charles Band, he got this title. What do we do? Oh, should we do it? Should we not? Oh, let's just go for it.
Chris, I'm really glad, actually, that you brought this up, because this brings me to my bit for the night, a little something I'm calling Comparasites. And then you play some music right there or whatever. Chris, it's funny that you just brought this up, because the 2019 Parasite film was originally a remake of the 1982 Parasite. But after writing the first draft, Bong Joon-ho thought it, quote, sucked royal ass.
Wow, what do you know?
And decided to scrap the project. And he moved on to another film called Striptease, but decided to change the title to Parasite as an homage to the original.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So anyway, like we said, Parasite is an early movie directed by our old buddy, Charles Band. And it was his second-ish directorial effort. And it mixes the body horror of Alien with a dystopia of Mad Max.
Even for a shitty director like Charles Band, somehow you can still tell this is like his second movie.
You know, Mike, it's funny that you bring that up, because that brings me to my second Comparasite. The 1982 Parasite was, of course, as we just mentioned, directed by Charles Band, who has directed 63 movies and various projects. The 2019 Parasite was directed by Bong Joon-ho, who has directed only 14 films, some of them short films. It's also worth noting that both men have the letter B in their names. Bong for Bong Joon-ho and Band for Charles Band.
Paul, do you, I don't want to step on your bit here, but do you have one that says that Charles Band did a film called Evil Bong?
Oh, wow, that's a good point. There's a lot of synchronicities here.
I thought the original title for that was Evil Bong Joon-ho.
They just wanted to shorten it because they felt that it was too long.
Didn't you guys meet Charles Band once?
We did.
Yeah, we did. Thank you for bringing that up again. We'll actually post the photo twice in on our website.
Yeah, bmoviemania.com. Go check it out.
Yeah, it was great. We got to shake hands with him, you know, for like 5 seconds.
We were in Arkansas.
Yeah, met him in Arkansas at the Full Moon Horror Film Convention.
I'm telling you, it's getting so a fella can't get away from the goddamn sickies no more.
So, Parasite, the 1982 version, stars Robert Glaudini and G.I. Jane herself, Demi Moore, in her first starring role.
Lemon farmer Demi Moore.
Quick takes!
All right, I'm pretty sure we all watched the correct movie at this point. I'm going to go in order from Paul to Jay. Paul?
Chris, this movie had everything. Canned fruit, canned beer, canned soup, and you're lucky because today it had lemonade.
Nice, thank you, Paul. Michael Hayes.
Did you not do a quick take? Yep, sounds like it.
Oh, boy, yeah. This movie, Parasite, was... it won an award for little... biggest miss of a movie at the Lemon Grove of 1992. I don't know. I forgot to write a quick take.
All right, Jay, did you write anything?
No, I didn't, but I'm going to try to speak from the heart. You know, I'm getting the impression here that I'm in the minority, but I actually liked this movie.
Fuck yourself, Jay.
It was not what I expected at all. And I rather enjoyed it, to be honest. What about you, Chris?
You know what? I'm just going to say that I watched an interview from last fall on the James Corden show where Demi Moore called Parasite the worst movie she's ever been in. I disagree.
What?
I think she's been in way worse things.
Chris, I'm really glad you brought this up because this brings me to my third Parasite.
Nice.
Actress Demi Moore, or Demi Moore, as James Corden was calling her. I don't know if you caught that or not. She made her film debut in the 1982 version of Parasite. In 2019, during an appearance on The Late Late Show with James Corden, Moore named Parasite as the worst movie she had ever been in. Ironically, she also had several scenes in the 2019 version of Parasite, but sadly, all of them were cut because of pacing issues. I only have one of these left. I have blown all of my comparisites.
Oh, God.
All right. So, well, let's just get into the movie discussion then. What the fuck is up with that opening?
It was weird, man. It was a dream sequence of our guy making a parasite, right? Making his little worm.
Was it a dream?
Well, I think he was dreaming of events that actually occurred, is the way I took it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very trippy.
You know what really sold it for me as he was really kind of dreaming the actual events? It kind of kept going back and forth between him and his lab creating the parasites and him strapped down to a gurney. But in the gurney scenes, there's a lot of smoke being piped in, and any self-respecting lab...
Well, why would you just pipe in smoke?
Why would you do that? Why would you pipe around smoke?
It sold it for me.
Yeah, it was a little bit difficult to like figure out exactly what was going on with this opening sequence. It didn't help that the print of this movie looks like somebody took a shit on it and covered it in Vaseline.
Well, I'm waiting for like Shout Factory to restore this thing.
Jay, you would probably buy the Blu-ray if like Scream Factory or somebody put out the Blu-ray.
I'm like the only one who would buy it.
They obviously re-released it last year simply because the movie Parasite came out. Like, someone had the rights, and they're like, oh, fuck it, let's put it out.
Probably banned. He's like, I'll make a few bucks.
I could use a little something to eat. Well, all we got left these days, pal, is canned fruit, canned beer, and canned soup.
at least the effects were pretty good. I mean, Stan Winston worked on them.
Yeah, the effects were pretty good.
You know, they're hand puppets. The parasites are hand puppets, but whatever. It's decent hand puppets. Yeah. So is Kermit. People love him.
It's 1982. What are you going to do?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's that big billboard that says whatever what year it is. I'm like, what?
Yeah, I had no idea this movie was post-apocalyptic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's 1993. It's like the first shot of the movie. It's just filmed in someone's fucking backyard of a small community up by Joshua Tree. That's all it was.
Yeah.
Which is post-apocalyptic.
Yep, that's what it looked like. I was going to say maybe Palmdale, Mike.
The only reason I say that is because Joshua, which Palmdale, I mean, you know, Palmdale's out there in the middle of fucking nowhere, right?
Yeah. Because they also shot some stuff at Vasquez Rocks, and that's up in that area.
Is that the Gorn Rock, Paul? Because I don't have any idea of the geography of California other than the Star Trek Gorn Rock.
Yeah, that's where they shot the famous Gorn fight scene for Star Trek. Star Trek Picard just shot there. I mean, virtually every Star Trek has shot at Vasquez Rocks. And just so you know, Chris, it's about maybe an hour north of L.A.
So did anyone watch this in 3D?
No.
Don't think I had the option.
Yeah, none of us did. Nope. We got this movie was filmed for 3D, though.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And we didn't get to see it. And once I figured that out, because I got bored watching it, so I started doing my research while watching it, obviously. And so, oh, shit, it's 3D. And then every time it was supposedly a 3D shot, you're like, ah, that's why it looks like absolute horse shit right now.
Chris, did you notice that... when James Corden asked Demi Moore about, you know, the worst movie she's ever been in, she referred to it as Parasite 3D.
Yeah, I did catch that. And I really want to watch the 3D version because it can't be any worse.
I beg to differ about that.
If this movie gives you a headache, that makes it worse.
Yeah, that would make it way worse. Fuck me. Even Jay, the dissenter of the episode, wouldn't watch it in 3D.
I would not watch it in 3D. Am I just going to have to defend this movie the whole time?
Tonight? I liked it too, Jay. I liked it too.
All right.
Fuck you too.
Well, look, okay. Should we talk about this? Like, look, it's got lasers right up front.
Yeah, so did Night Beast, though. And you know what? Night Beast had at least two legs to stand on. This had zero legs because it was a slug puppet.
You know, I'd have to rewatch Night Beast to compare the two here.
Paul wakes up from his dream in his delivery van and explores... the work camp.
Yeah, man. I don't know where he's going, but he's in a corporate van, right? From the people he's fleeing.
Yeah.
So Paul drives around and he finds this compound of people. Well, there's not that many people there, but he wanders around and hears this woman being accosted by some men. And I don't know, did you have a kink tank for that, for what was going on there?
Kink tank.
You're going to
like this one.
Oh, Jesus. I thought this was going to be a short episode.
Well, I mean, how fast do you want to go through this?
I'm just not feeling kinky tonight, that's all.
All things is that I have a kink tank for later, but...
Oh, you do? I was just trying to get a kink tank going. Okay, yeah, it's actually terrible because it seems like they're assaulting this poor woman.
Yeah, and also, yeah, that's why I don't have a kink tank for that.
Yeah, and then they don't. Like, she's actually into it is pretty much the only
thing. Yeah, current notes right here are all caps. What the fuck is happening here? What role play? I don't... And then I just trail off on random letters.
Well, so Paul saves her, right? From the sickies. Right. And she attacks him. I think she was just really horny, and Paul fucking cock-blocked her.
Yeah.
Yeah, he sure did.
They were role playing, and that's a thing people do. I don't want to say anything more because it was a rape scene and I didn't like it.
I'm not sure why that was even needed. There was no point.
Well, no, it technically wasn't a rape scene. They were going to rape her in the role play that was going on, though. He literally said, quit wiggling around. And then she's like, no, no. And then he says, you're going to like it and shut up. And so, yeah, it was a role play of rape.
I mean, look, all it was, everybody knows that, like, early 80s movies, this sort of time frame, there was just a lot of unfortunate stuff happening to women where they were topless and bad things were happening to them. And this is just another example.
No, she was complicit, though. She was consenting to the situation. She was part of their gang.
Yeah, I guess so. It was weird.
This is the worst kink tank ever.
This is not a kink tank. So, yeah, it's terrible.
It was pretty funny. I mean, the audience should have known when the kink tank, like the stinger on the kink tank was kind of a, you ain't gonna like this one.
Well, one thing I did like about this scene, though, is all the stock footage of the snakes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, love snakes.
Well, hey, show the stock footage of the snake in the first part of the scene. Use the stock footage of the snake by the last part of the scene.
Chekhov stock footage of a snake is pretty pretty solid.
Yes.
Don't quite think that's how it works, but sure.
Yes, because Paul wrestles with one of the men after cock blocking and then gets him bitten by a snake.
One thing I love, though, between the fights here with Paul and the sickies and the girl is that we meet Buddy. He's just a character that sounds completely racist against sickies and really loves his coffee.
Come on over to my room and I'll give you a cup of coffee.
Coffee?
That's right. Real coffee.
But also totally seems to come on to Paul. Like, he's really into Paul. Like, he says, you know, give you a cup of coffee. And it sounds like he's got like a wink and a smile. Like, there's something more than coffee that he wants.
I've come on Paul before.
Huh.
We were roommates for a lot of years.
Kink tank. I didn't get the impression that the old guy was hitting on him at all.
Yeah, and also Paul Dean spends the entire film trying to save his own life because there's a parasite about to burst out of him. I don't think he's thinking about that.
Oh, thanks for bringing that up, Jay. Because this movie could have saved me a whole lot of fucking pain if he just thrown his goddamn body in a fucking volcano and been done with it.
What?
Because we learn at some point, sorry to jump the fuck ahead, but we find out that he was working in a lab. There was a bunch of parasites. This company was paying for it. He found out they were bad. So he killed all the bad parasites. One of them spilled on him, and one got away. The one that spilled on him is in his body. The other one that got away is out there.
It's in a tank. It's in a canister that he has.
Pink tank.
But we find out that what's going to happen is the parasite is going to, this big slug inside of his body is going to like explode effectively and send a million spores into the air. And if a spore lands on you, you get a parasite. Fucking bury your body and die, you piece of shit. Don't make me watch an hour and a half of fucking horse shit.
All right. I guess it's rating time.
You just want to give the rating and
no, I have a kink tank eventually to give, and it's important. So I have to hang around for that.
Look, Chris, all I'm saying is that if you've ever had like a tapeworm or something like that, your top priority is not like to get your fuck on. You want to like get, you deal with your, you know, problems.
Yeah, and he has to shoot his parasite with a syringe in his gut.
All right. Okay. All right. I get that that may not be the most sexy thing you can do in a movie. So
sorry to disappoint.
Yeah. God damn it.
Paul, our afflicted hero, drives to the resort town of Joshua.
This is where I like to hang out.
It's great. There's like five people living there.
I think there's eight.
Hey, well, you know, are we just going to blow past the entire gas station scene?
Well, okay.
No, I'm kidding. We can totally...
There's a whole gas station scene.
It's okay.
Where he wants to pay with some money, and your money's no good here, silver only.
Yeah,
and...
no, they barter. It's all fine. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
He eventually finds a hotel in Joshua. Does anybody want to talk about the hotel owner?
What was her name?
She was billed as Elizabeth, but she says her name is Maggie.
Yeah, Maggie, that's right. She just sort of gives him a room and says that they have electricity from 7 to 9 and water's free. And he gives her a gold ring in exchange for the room. And she would do anything for a fresh tube of lipstick.
It is important to know she says she's not wearing much makeup. And she wishes she had some because it's expensive. But she's wearing a fuck ton of makeup.
I think that's the joke.
Yeah, she's the old starlet with too much makeup.
I think it's important. I think this was retconned into the film. I'm almost positive this was retconned into the film to make things work later. So,
what,
dear listener.
What element was retconned?
I'm not going to spoil it for the listener. I'm going to let everyone unsolve this puzzle and unwrap this package as it goes along. But listen, remember, this woman claims she's not wearing much makeup, but she's wearing a lot of makeup. And that's going to be very important later in the film.
Well, this brings me to something I think was really interesting about the movie. No, I mean, like, genuinely interesting, is that she was played by actress Vivian Blaine, who... I'm not super familiar with, but I did a little research, and she was a big star on Broadway in, like, kind of during the golden age of Hollywood, the 1940s, 1950s. And she was a really big actress. And this is the twilight of her career.
Mm.
And we've got Demi Moore in like the very beginnings of her career. And it's interesting how low budget movies like this kind of like actors and actresses kind of like pass through different phases of their career.
Yeah, this is one of her last movies.
All thanks to Charles Band.
All thanks to Charles
Band. This is so meta.
I'm looking at her on IMDb right now. I like stuff like that, Chris. In all seriousness, I like it when like there's somebody really young and up and coming mixed with somebody who's like in the twilight of their career. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really tell until, you know, it's all said and done who Demi Moore was going to turn into, you know, but it's neat to see.
Right.
It's a great question. What has she turned into? Anti-vaxxer? What's up? Sorry, continue. Yeah, she's probably fine, right?
I think she's fine.
Well,
hey, Pat is here.
It isn't Little Miss Lemongrove of 1992, huh?
So I just really like how the plot hasn't even kicked in at this point. You've got some...
It's a slow burn.
Little parasite teases at the beginning, and we're almost half an hour into this movie.
Yeah.
And fuck all has happened. It's a very slow burn.
I found that there was enough, though, to keep me interested. Chris, can I take the part, can I discuss the part of the film where the black Lamborghini pulls up to the gas station?
Yes, please. Because this is about the time we meet our villain that we talked about.
Yeah, earlier. I'm going to go into this in great detail, so
fantastic.
Here we go.
Just stretch it out as long, and pad this bitch, just like the movie.
Yes, no, the black Lamborghini pulls up. And the guy at the gas station he has some canned water, and we meet Wolf the Merchant here, who is, I believe, also had been in some things. You know, he was not. This is not his first rodeo.
Yeah, I think he'd been in a lot of stuff.
I know he cut his hair for this role.
Guys, I have an announcement to make. I am bringing back an old segment called Carfax.
Carfax.
Great. It's really terrific.
In this film, the merchant who pulls up in the black Lamborghini does ask Wolf the Trader to fill up his car with methane, which might sound like an interesting and quirky futuristic fuel for a car, but actually it's not. In the past, NGVs, or natural gas vehicles, have existed. In a natural gas-powered vehicle, energy is released by combustion of essentially methane gas fuel with oxygen from the air to carbon dioxide and water vapor to an internal combustion engine. Methane is the cleanest burning hydrocarbon, and many contaminants presented in natural gas are removed at source. That was Carfax revisited.
I thought this was going to be a Lamborghini fact.
I love Jay's tenacity to get through this, at least.
Thank you, Mike, for that interesting and fascinating discussion.
we're at Collins now. Collins is a cool character.
Hey, Collins!
Collins! Collins, we're here. Collins! Collins! Collins!
Yeah, I really need you guys today.
Collins owns the bar.
Wait, Jay, sorry. I need to quickly interject, because this is where we kind of get a glimpse of what happened to make it a post-apocalyptic situation. And we don't hear much, but Colin has this scar on his face, and he does say at some point, atomic shit was falling from the skies, people started dropping like flies, which also sounds like a dope-ass fucking mixtape. Also, we kind of get the idea that something atomic happens. It wasn't just this parasite that was the thing. Like, I think the parasite was something that happened after the apocalypse happened. So we kind of learned that something atomic, probably a nuclear bomb or whatever, happened, right? So just setting the environment of stuff. I thought that was a very important line that they don't talk about at any other point in this movie.
I just lost my appetite.
And then the gang comes in.
Yeah.
Which, okay.
Perfect.
God damn it.
What?
You know, the other thing that's weird about this movie, almost kind of similar to FP in a way, is that it's post-apocalyptic, but also kind of not in a way. Like, you can still buy gas if you want to.
You can still buy a fucking Lamborghini, Paul.
So do you think that that's what the apocalypse is? Because we're not far off. Do you think that's what it's really going to be like, where there's still some sort of system in place to, like, kind of get what you need?
I think you're right.
Yeah, sounds right.
It's just part of the backdrop.
I think actually contextually through this, our hero, Paul Dean, does try to pay with paper money throughout the film. And he's out in the boonies, right? So he's from a big city. So I imagine in the big cities, there is still economy as we know it right now, right? Things are probably really expensive. Things are probably fucking fucked up there, but they still have like a governmental like situation where they can spend money that has been, you know, approved by a government.
You have to barter. It's just a different economic system in the apocalypse.
That's a lot of fucking coffee packets you have to trade for that Lambo.
Yeah, and I think since we're out in the boonies, these are the people who don't trust that shit. So it'll be the entire Midwest come 5 years from now. It'll just be no one trusts any sort of fucking government or money. And it'll be just, you know, silver only. In this movie, it was always silver. He paid with silver coin. He had a silver shard, whatever.
And I'm willing to bet that that's part of why Jay liked this movie.
Yeah, I think it'll just be a slow stranglehold, Paul. We'll all slowly choke to death as the resources keep going up and up and up.
Just a sort of like vaguely cyberpunk aspect to it.
I like films that are warning signs of things to come that people can use as a roadmap for survival.
Yeah, something like that.
Indeed.
Speaking of warning signs, the shitty kid gang comes in.
Yes. I was surprised that they had so much to do in the movie.
Yeah, they were like central to the plot, like pretty big characters.
Yeah.
This is they are the best part of the movie.
Think so?
The most interesting part.
I would agree. But there were three of the gang members that are notable, kind of as an aside, outside of this movie. The first one, so the first one is the leader, Rickus, right?
Great name.
Played by Luca Berkovici, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, which we know him as Rickus, the gang leader in this movie, but you may also know him as the co-creator of the Ghoulies franchise.
Yes, that is how I knew him.
Yeah. What?
The punk band the Groovy Ghoulies?
No, the little monsters that come out of the toilet.
Oh!
Those Ghoulies.
Well, good for him.
Yeah. Those Ghoulies.
I love when they go to college.
I've never actually seen a Ghoulies movie, so I just remember seeing it in my VHS like video store when I was a kid, but always fascinated by that fucking puppet coming out of the toilet, but never saw it.
Well, Chris, I have Ghoulies 4 over here if you ever want to borrow it on DVD.
Nice, I'm going to skip right ahead to the best one.
Hey, Chris, don't skip that, because in part 3 they do go to college.
God
so you
damn
might
it,
wanna,
I gotta watch that one now. Son of a bitch. Out. But the second of the kid gang to walk in is, I think her name is Dana, but she's named by, I hope I'm pronouncing this right also, Cherry Curie, the former lead singer of the fucking Runaways.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Huh. The song Cherry Bomb, Cherry Bomb, was written about her.
What?
I'm surprised they didn't use that as the fucking theme song.
They, like, really underutilized her.
They totally underutilized her.
Talk about Zeke.
Well, Zeke, I was not going to talk about him, but he actually was an early AIDS activist in Hollywood back in the, I believe, the mid to late 80s.
Who the fuck are you? What is all this research? I love it.
Yeah, I know. I just like to think that you knew all this. You're like, oh, clearly it's Cherry.
I didn't do much research here.
Like, oh, of course it's Cherry. I know all about
but
her.
But he formed one of the main AIDS foundations, a big AIDS charity back when it was still not an accepted disease, I guess.
Well, we lose one playmate, we find another, huh?
Anyway, finally, the third person, well, fourth now, the fourth notable character is Arn, a character whose name I only know because I read IMDb.
Arn?
Why is he notable?
Because he is played by Freddie Moore, who you might know as the husband of Demi Moore at this time period.
Oh, really?
What?
Yeah, she did meet him on this film.
No, well, no. They've been married for a while by the time they made this film.
Really?
Yeah. Like, they met when she was...
This guy?
Yes, that guy.
For the listener, Paul is holding up his phone to be like, this guy's who to be married?
My gods. What the hell was she thinking?
They met when he was in his late 20s. She was, I believe, 16 or 17.
Oh, fuck off.
It's a very wholesome story. He divorced his wife to marry Demi Moore. And that's where she got her stage name.
Is this what the episode is going to be from here on out? Just factoids?
Just factoids and trivia, Paul. That's all we're doing.
Hey, we're now People's B-Movie Mania podcast. We work for People magazine now. Let's talk about all the stuff.
To move this fucking paparazzi ahead, we get some fights. We get some guns. Collins has a shotgun. Demi Moore has a gun. They fight off some kids. The kids move from person to person to, like, beat people up. They eventually kidnap Paul and ransack his room and steal the kink tank. I'm sorry, they steal the parasite canister. And Zeke, the AIDS activist I mentioned earlier, he really, really wants to open that canister.
I mean, does this seem like a good idea?
No!
What did they think was going to happen? There's nothing good that could be in that canister.
Well, hold on. No, that because Paul says that it's medical supplies, and so they think that it's some sort of drugs that they can get into.
Okay. I guess. But any sort of biological-looking canister, yeah, you get what you deserve.
The other thing is that Paul could have easily just said, look, it's a deadly parasite. Don't open it. He doesn't ever say that.
He did say, if you open it, you die.
Well,
there are so many ways this movie could have not happened.
But it does, and he opens it, and he sticks his hand in there.
Oh, and a really sweet 3D shot that was made.
Yeah.
It's like you get the hand coming right for the camera. It's like... And then the fucking parasite jumps out and latches onto his shoulder.
There's something wet in here.
Yeah, and it jumps out and attaches itself to Zeke, right? And then they kick the crap out of Paul for just because of this. And the movie fades to black as they're pounding the crap out of Paul. It's a weird edit here, because then when he comes to, he's with Demi Moore.
Back at her place.
And she gives him tea, rattlesnake, hot.
Well, hey, this was Charles Band's second movie. He forgot to film a scene, I guess. So
he didn't know how to get from Paul getting a mud hole stomped in him to Paul laying with Demi Moore. He did not know how to do that, so he faded to black.
I mean, the whole thing felt weird. Because it kept fading to black, like it was a TV movie or something.
Yeah, it just, they're like, stuff happens, and then he's here.
I really kept expecting commercials for Night Beast Industries to pop up here and there.
Also, thank you, Night Beast Industries.
So here's where Wolf shows up to tell us how much he hates liars and loves lemonade.
Oh, yeah, the guy, the nice man from the beginning.
Buddy.
Tries to cover for Paul for some reason, and what's he get for it? Gets his hand sliced off by a laser.
By a fucking Travis Bickle fucking laser.
Yeah, and then it fades to black. Like, what happened to him?
I mean, he probably bled out, I guess, Paul. Do we need to get into that?
No, it's fine.
Anyone got a medical corner segment?
He's dead.
No, keep going.
Who is it now?
Open the door.
What do you want?
Open the door, lady.
Out of the way.
Wolf, like, asks around town, he goes to the gas station, he talks to Collins, gets some fresh lemonade, and eventually he finds out where Paul is staying. He kind of ransacks the room that's already been ransacked by the kid gang.
Twice.
Yeah, it's been ransacked twice now.
Well, Maggie goes through his room, the punks go through, everybody goes through Paul's room.
So, doesn't find shit, because the kids took everything, but I think at this point, Paul convinces Demi Moore to go with him to get his equipment so he can find a cure for the parasite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Paul's real sad and sorry for himself.
Well, he's also dying.
Instead of just fucking burying himself into the ground so when the parasite explodes, it can't do anything. Fucking just do that. Save the world. Fuck yourself. You're a dumbass anyway. Fuck off. I hate you.
Along those lines, he should have just hugged Zeke, and they should have set them all on fire. Movie's done.
Surely you can't kill the parasite by setting the host and the parasite on fire. What kind of ending will that be?
Well, I'm sure we'll get to the discussion of how this thing dies later in a couple hours.
Hey, let's cut back to the kids. Zeke is about to die. Sunrise, he dies. And great beginning of a day right there.
Great. Great beginning of a day.
Okay, there's a tense scene because, yes, Zeke is dead, and then Rickus is like, where's the thing? And he goes over to Dana, and they pull over the blanket, and the parasite's just cuddling right there next to her.
It's very cute. Favorite shot of the movie.
And she has to just roll over and leave, but she doesn't, and the thing sticks to her leg. It was just sitting there next to her for the longest time.
Yeah, like... If you're a parasite, what's the delay? Like, get on her leg.
Okay, guys, we're being really hard on this parasite. This parasite has been parasiting for so fucking long. It has been constantly parasiting. When does it get a break? When does it get a nap? Let it snuggle up, be the little spoon for a minute before it goes back into the world and parasites some more. Let it fucking rest.
Parasite's gonna parasite.
That's what I'm saying. Leave the parasite alone.
All right, I'm gonna rush through the rest of this bullshit.
We gotta get to that kink tank at some point.
Yeah, well, we gotta get to the whole like comedy bit where everyone's looking for everyone else and just barely misses each other.
Rick fits his girlfriend into town and, you know, puts her up in the boarding room in the room next to where Paul was staying. And they find out, oh, Paul's a doctor, we gotta figure out what's going on. So Rick goes to find Paul, but this is after Demi Moore goes to find Collins, the diner owner guy. She can't find him. Rick is fucking misses Paul and Demi Moore, and Wolf goes after everyone, and it's just a fucking mess right now. I don't even know what I'm saying.
Everyone's looking for everyone. There's not that many people around, so it's easy to miss everybody.
Yes, it is.
Did you guys know that Robert Glaudini, is that how you say his name?
Sure.
He has written lots of plays, and he was in a sleazy wrestling... He played a sleazy wrestling promoter called Dr. Tweed in Grunt, the wrestling movie.
Yeah, I wish we watched that one.
Just trying to pad the episode. I'm just...
Trying to pad the episode?
I'm just trying to help Chris pad this episode a little
Thanks
bit.
Thanks for bringing this to a halt.
Thank you, Paul, for doing your research in the middle of our goddamn episode.
Sure.
Really, really means a lot to me.
No problem.
In the meantime, Wolf is there to find Paul, too. Paul just wanders off in the fucking desert, leaving Demi Moore to herself, because he can't figure it out.
He thinks he's dead.
He does.
He keeps saying he needs that other parasite.
Only way he can find a cure is to find that other parasite.
Mm-hmm.
But Wolf gets to Demi Moore's place first. And, you know, at this point, like, Wolf really likes to beat the shit out of her.
Yeah, that was rough.
That happens a lot.
Yeah, he slaps her around.
I feel pretty bad. But then Rickus comes to save the day.
Pat! Hey, Wells! Pat!
Well, Rickus had some conflict, you know. He,
I kind of dug that.
He wasn't all bad, let's put it that way. He had some sort of...
No, and that's what I found was interesting.
Except, you know, Rickus really didn't save the day so much as drive his really loud car to alert Wolf that someone was there. So Wolf stopped beating up Demi Moore in her vegetable garden to go fight Rickus instead.
Well, that's all it took. She's lived.
She did.
And she kind of took it like a champ.
Yeah.
Like, Paul shows up eventually, and he's like, you okay? Yeah. And she's like, yeah, I'm fine. No big deal.
But that's also where Paul figures out how to figure out the cure.
What, he Jesus that shit?
Yes.
I was tempted by the devil 3 times, and he told me each time, use a fucking high-pitched frequency, you dumbass. It turns out it was right.
He just drops it. He just wandered the desert, and then he came back and he had it figured out.
But Mike, I gotta say though, you can kill it with high frequency sound.
What?
But how are you going to know which frequency to use without a little bit of the parasite's fluid?
Wait, Chris, the fluid, are you talking about how it's like really slimy and like gooey?
Mm. Oh, come on! I thought that would be the kink tank.
Okay, but what about on the outside of its body?
No, like the fluid that's inside its parasitic sack body.
Does anyone want to say that the parasite was slimy, please?
No, I don't think that's good enough.
Mike. Oh, that brings me to my first installment of Kink Tank.
Oh, what do we have? Some sort of kink tank. At last.
First intended one. For Micophilia.
God damn it.
Is the sexual interest in being crawled upon or nibbled on by insects such as ants and other small creatures. This paraphilia often involves the application of insects on the genitals, but other areas of the body may also be on the focus. The desired effect may be a tickling or stinging, or in the case of slugs, like our parasite, slimy sensation.
Oh, what do we have? Some sort of kink tank.
Sorry, what's next?
Well, unfortunately for the parasite, none of the people in the movie were into that.
Ah, that's a bummer.
Parasite drops off Cherry Bomb, kills Maggie, and I mean, this is where we get some really great, where the effects really play out, because Cherry Bomb looks pretty fucking dead. We go into to Maggie's room where she's playing with some makeup. We get some great 3D stuff going on if you are watching the 3D version.
Well, the slug is, like, climbing on the ceiling at some point, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, what's it doing?
Yeah, it's a big parasite now.
It is. But it's also drooling, on, like, dropping onto her hands and all this kind of stuff. Oh, that brings me to my second intended King Tank.
King Tank.
Oh, my God.
God damn it.
No, this is still about formicophilia. But in the first reported case of formicophilia...
Chris, please cut that out.
Oh, my God. Yeah, okay, I'll cut that out.
But, Mike, I'm really glad you brought this up, because this brings me to my last comparisites. Robert Glaudini, who we have been talking about all episode as Dr. Paul. Yeah, he directed a lot of plays, including... Well, he wrote, actually, a hit off-Broadway play called Jack Goes Boating, which was directed by Peter Dubois and starred Philip Seymour Hoffman. Parasite 2019, Philip Seymour Hoffman didn't see it.
Wow.
No, I can't imagine he did.
Hey, Paul, I'm really glad you brought up Parasite 2019, because that brings me to my final kink tank of the episode.
Kink tank.
No.
You're just looking stuff up now.
7 years before Parasite 2019 came out, another case was described. At the age of 14, the patient saw an ice cream stick covered with ants and wondered how it would feel if his penis was in place of the stick. He began letting ants crawl on his genitals, especially fire ants. A practice he found sexually exciting and that continued into adulthood.
No.
Cut it out.
Oh.
No.
Hey!
No.
Hey, don't yuck this yum, man. Formicophilia is
Chris,
a thing,
cut it
man.
Out.
No.
Oh, my God. I don't even know what... You know what? I think this is going to be the only unreleased episode of B-Movie Mania.
Mike, you don't have any more Carfax?
After the fucking parasite springs surprises Demi Moore by hiding behind a picture frame, Paul and Demi Moore catch the thing, get some fluid.
Whoa! Are we blowing past Maggie?
No, we talked about Maggie. We talked about Maggie. She fucking died.
This is very important.
Yeah, we blew past Maggie. It lands on her. It drains her face and of fluid, and you see her kind of go large marge, and then her head blows up.
And, well, this is what's really important, because she's obviously, her head blows up like Jay says, and it's a pretty good practical effect, but she is obviously some sort of a puppet or a stand-in thing here, and is super fucking pale. And so I'm pretty sure that the only reason she was saying she puts on a lot of makeup, because we see her in this scene putting on way even more makeup, is because they needed to make her face look like it could be plausibly be that puppet.
You think so?
I think that's why they retconned it at the beginning.
That's an interesting theory. Tell you what, Mike. Tell you what. Next time Paul and I hang out with Charles Band, we'll ask him.
Okay, sounds good. I'm hoping to see a picture of that someday.
So fucking Maggie gets her head exploded by the parasite, while Paul and Demi Moore, I don't even know what Demi Moore's character is. She's just Demi Moore.
Pat.
She's a lemon fun.
She's lemon. Pat. Her name is Pat. That's right, Pat.
Pat.
So Paul and Pat, like that sounds better than Paul and Demi. Paul and Pat go looking for the parasite in the boarding house. And the parasite is smart enough to hide behind a picture frame to, ha-ha, surprise Demi Moore. But it misses. They catch it in a blanket. They stab it with a syringe to get its vital fluids. And now, finally, Paul can figure out a cure.
We've got to get to that other parasite and extract the sample of its fluid.
And then what?
I can determine its frequency and use it to kill the one inside me.
Let's talk about the parasite cure.
Okay, but here's the thing. Here's something where I'm like, what?
What?
Like, it works. You know, they turn this sound thing up, whatever it is, some sort of sound device that causes high frequencies. And it works in the sense that the parasite can't handle it and, like, launches itself out of Paul's stomach. But
yeah, it's gross.
It does not look good for Paul. Like, I mean, like, it was in his stomach and like... It
bursts out.
It bursts out of him like alien style.
What I like about this scene is that the fluid was so vital to figuring out the correct frequency. They couldn't have just hooked up that machine back at Demi Moore's place and like, all right, fuck off out of my gut here.
Let's try it. Turn the knob. Woo! That's it.
This machine they used didn't seem capable of too many different frequencies. And how many different frequencies are there? Come on.
There's like seven at least, you know.
Paul could have figured it out.
Maybe.
Could have brute forced that son of a bitch, and that fucking parasite is out in their fucking vegetable garden. But no.
But no.
I love how it implies, though, they're going to use sound against the big parasites, but that's not entirely what happens. Let's talk about the end.
Eventually, Collins and Rickus try to sort of all work together here, and Wolf is really the main bad guy, and Rickus tries to save Collins, right?
Yeah, he does.
And he does. And then Wolf gets a shot off with his laser and kills Rickus. The guy, you kind of, you didn't like him in the beginning, then he was like kind of okay, and then he tries to do a good thing in the end, and he gets killed.
Well, so he redeems himself, but he has to, you know, sort of like pay for some of the stuff that he's done previously.
Right.
Well, he's also like, it's not just right then that he suddenly turns out to be someone who's being useful. He's doing it for the last too long of a movie.
Most of the movie. Like,
He's him and his gang are introduced as assholes. At some point, they understand that they need to fucking do something. And so they are... I thought this was interesting, that they actually used the bad gang, which usually in most movies become like the pawn of the merchants or something, right? Like that's what he would have been for this, because they would have like been like, oh, we'll pay you money, go fuck up the doctor or whatever. But that's not what happened. He ends up being like, fuck this, I need to save my friend, figure out what's going on. This Paul Dean guy actually is gonna be useful and good and whatever, so I'm gonna help with this. And so he does shit.
Well, they kind of explained that because Rickus used to belong to the corporation. He lived in a work camp or the suburbs, as he said, and he's got the tattoo and everything. So he is totally, once he finds out that Wolf is this merchant, he's like, fuck this guy. I'm not having anything to do with him. And he hates that guy. So
yeah, he kind of aligns himself with the good guys. It was an interesting choice.
Yeah. So Paul is saved, but not from Wolf. And there's still the big old parasite to deal with.
It attaches itself to Wolf. It finds Wolf and like attaches itself to him. And he goes like stumbling out of a window or something with Paul and like falls onto the ground.
Pretty good shot.
That's all right. It's pretty grainy. Again, this thing needs a new transfer. And so they land next to like a, what would you call it? Like a kink tank.
No, not next to. That's more, that probably more falls into the Carfax zone, because they land on top of a methane tank, like on top of the methane tank.
Hey, Mike, if that's your kink, that's okay.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm not going to yuck that yum.
I don't know what that means.
Then Paul Dean shouts, shoot the tank. So Demi shoots the tank. A bullet goes into the tank. Fire comes out. Then Paul yells, no, the tank. And then so she shoots it again. And this is where I understood why I hate Paul.
Yeah, but it gets the job done. The tank blows up and the parasite blows up and Wolf blows up and credits.
Turns out they didn't really need those high frequency sound waves after all.
No. Just, no.
It's shocking. Yeah. The explosion did the trick. But, you know, there is, at the very end, Patty says, you're finally free, it's over, right? And then they show this ambiguous shot. It's just this dark something, and there's sort of a wind sound. It's this weird, abstract shot at the very end. And so
it's the burned corpse of the guy, of Wolf, yeah.
Was it?
I thought it was another parasite, which goes into, like, I read Charles Band wanted to make a sequel to this at some point, but got distracted by Puppet Master and all those other things.
His 50 other films.
You guys are confused. Okay, it's very obviously understandable. It's Charles Band's second movie. This is he wasn't good at like pulling apart the pieces. So it zooms in slowly on the burned up corpse, you know, of Wolf and the parasite there, and then Demi is actually speaking not to them but to us, the audience member. And she says, you're finally free. It's over. And then it cuts the credits, which gives us permission to turn it off.
You know, Mike, what one thing that I find interesting about that interpretation is because that leads me into rating time.
Rating time.
I'm like, please tell me.
Oh, thank God. That's a sad
Yeah, I'm like, don't
know.
Tell me you have a bit planned somehow.
So Demi Moore was in Parasite. But she was also in the movie Ghost, co-starring Patrick Swayze.
Oh.
So we're going to rate this 1 to 100, Peaceways.
Very nice. Very nice.
Going with the classic. Nice.
Peaceways.
We're going to go with this one. We're gonna rate this from Mike to Jay.
Oh, boy. I have to go first.
I say that Mike goes last because I want him to, like, bring the fire.
All right. We're going to rate this from Jay to Mike.
All right. Fine.
Yeah.
Look, okay. We have beat the tar out of this movie. And I'm going to tell you, and it is not that bad.
It really isn't.
No, you stop. You'll get your chance. It's not that bad. It gives you just enough to kind of know that it's post-apocalyptic. There's a lot of gaps. They don't do a lot of world building. But I felt like there was enough to get it and to see what was going on. I liked the fact that there weren't a ton of characters, and so you spent quite a bit of time with each character, and you see the shifting alignments like we were talking about. Like, you think Rickus is bad, he turns good, and then Wolf is the obvious bad guy through the whole thing. He's driving a Lamborghini and he has a laser. I mean, come on, he's not that bad. You know, the lemons, it would have been cool had the lemons had something to do with the parasite killing it. Like, that would have been a nice connection since Demi was a lemon farmer. But I thought it was fine. The characters are quirky. You know, Paul's a little flat, but he's sick. Give him a break, you know? You know, I'm not going to rate this poorly. I would buy the Blu-ray with all of the Demi Moore interviews and Charles Band featurettes.
That's not going to happen.
Well, we can hope. You know, I'd watch part two if there was a part two. I'm going to go 76 Peaceways.
Wow.
All right.
I didn't have a problem at all watching this movie.
Well, Paul, do you disagree?
I don't necessarily disagree, but you know how sometimes on this podcast we'll watch a movie and then we start talking about it and we, like, are having, like, fun talking about it, so we rate it higher. I feel like the opposite happened with this movie, where, like, the more we talked about it, we're just like, oh, God. No, I'm with Jay on this one. I mean, I definitely didn't like it as much. I thought the pacing was slow, which is to be expected for, like, a early 80s movie. And, you know, I have a 4K TV, so it's really tough to watch something that looks this crappy. I mean, the aspect ratio, like, we didn't touch on it, but it was the aspect ratio was, like, stretched, you know? Like, clearly it was, like, 4x3 stretched to widescreen and, like, mm-hmm. It looked like half of the picture was missing sometimes. So it's not a pleasant,
yeah,
in terms of, you know, the quality. It wasn't pleasant. But yeah, I mean, all the stuff that Jay said, I pretty much agree with. And I kind of like the tone of it and everything. So I don't know. What'd you say, Jay? 76?
Yeah.
I'll go 52 Peaceways.
Okay.
Mike, you going to bring us down a little more?
Anyone who owns a fucking Lamborghini is a piece of shit, Jay. I disagree with you on that part. Anyway, there's no good person with a Lamborghini.
It's fine for the film.
I don't think he owned it.
No, that guy's a piece of shit.
People drive crazy stuff in films.
He has a laser gun. Fuck him. Well, let me finish this,
all right. Malort. Okay. Oh, the Malort's gone now.
He's the bad guy of the movie. I'm not sure what you expect. And I'm pretty sure the company he worked for owned the Lambo.
You want him to drive a sensible Honda Fit?
A black one.
All I want was for this movie to have been over. All he had to do was catch Paul Dean. All that guy had to do, he had one job: catch him, the movie ends. That's all I need. And he didn't give that to me. All he did was fucking jerk off into the fucking desert. Nothing happened. His Lambo fucked him up the ass a couple times, which is fine if that's your thing, but I wanted him not to be distracted, and I wanted him to catch Paul Dean and kill him.
Maniacs. Very sorry.
Because Paul Dean sucked. That fucking character was a fucking garbage, boring person, and it was uninteresting, and I fucking wished he died when the slug burst out of his body like any other person would have, but didn't. We got to have our hero live on, that fucking slimy cocksucker.
Wow. Okay. So
I didn't rate it yet, Hudson. Let me finish. This movie should have been over so much faster, but it was slow, It was tedious. It was laborious. That might sound redundant, but it's important to emphasize what this movie felt like. Somehow Charles Band got better. Not somehow. Good job on him. Figured out movies better. Man, I don't know. Fuck, man.
You can do it.
I almost called my mom to ask if I could just not watch this. Like, I almost called her, said, do I have to? Please, could you call in sick for me? Please. I didn't want to finish it. And I look, and I'm 10 minutes left. And I'm like, fuck, I still don't want to do it. I might call her. But it didn't. I powered through it. And so, I don't know, for Peaceway-wise, I don't know, I've been on this earth 37 years. So, I don't know, give it half of that Peaceway-wise.
Ouch. Wait, what is that?
Math is hard, Mike.
It's 39.5. No, it's not 39.5. Yeah, fine, 39.5. 39.5.
You're giving it 39.5?
Because I fucked up on my thoughts, yeah.
All right, Chris.
You know what? 62 Peaceways.
Wow.
Not even going to justify it. I agree with everyone.
All right.
Chris, I feel bad for you. I feel bad because, like, this was a great pick for the podcast, like, in terms of the bit, you know, with Parasite having just won Best Picture.
Yeah.
And half of us didn't mind the movie, but for some reason, maybe just because it's kind of like, you know, with the slow pace, it just makes it a little difficult sometimes to, like, get through it.
It is somehow terrible and not that bad at the same time.
On the next episode of B-Movie Mania.
Well, guys, I know that last movie took place in 1993, which obviously becomes a shitstorm. But let's rewind 7 years to 1986, when a top secret agent is murdered. His estranged gymnast son, Lance Stargrove, played by John Stamos,
yes!
teams up with yes. his dad's seductive and deadly associate to face his father's killer, the fiendish mastermind, Velvet Von Wagner, played by Gene Simmons. We're watching 1986's Never Too Young to Die, the fucking movie that will murder us by how good
oh
it is.
Oh my god, I have goosebumps.
I have never heard of this.
Are you kidding me? I literally just watched that. I was going to pick that for this season.
It's on Amazon. It's on Tubi TV. Fucking watch it. Fucking love it. This movie will get 100 by one of us, I guarantee
it. Is
or
so
fucking
good.
Chug something.
I'm not even going to disguise it. I'm so excited.
It is perfect.
I was going to pick this movie. It is awesome.
Oh my god, Paul, you're gonna fucking cum your pants. Like, they're gonna be crusty all
it's
the way down.
It's so good, dude. John Stamos versus Gene Simmons as a hermaphroditic lounge singer biker gang warrior guy. Oh, I'm so excited. That is such a good pick. It was gonna be my next pick.
Well, thank you for listening, B-Movie Maniacs and Movie Maniacs and just regular fucking maniacs. Check us out. Give us a 5-star review. I don't know how these things end.
You're doing great.
Jay, Mike, cover this for me.
Okay, we have t-shirts and pants and G-strings available on our website. If you're cold or hot or just need clothes or you want to buy some clothes for people, you can look at it on bmoviemania.com.
You can also follow along with us on various social medias. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. If a new hot thing comes out, fuck it, we'll join it. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, and we say lots of stuff on social media that you may not
like,
hear on a podcast.
A good example is the one time that...
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydie? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out, touch them. They're touching themselves, and they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!
What's up?
here's my challenge to you, because I know that you have been trying hard to get into the editing thing, and you've been doing a great job, but here's my challenge
to you.
Edit this episode to under an hour.